Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Olivet Pop. It's Monday, December 28th, the morning after Washington lost 20-13 to Carolina, a game that would have won them the division. Here to talk about that, it's the Tyler Heinicke to my Tyler Heinicke. Or is it Taylor? Anyway, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. It's Taylor. I screwed that up yesterday and tried to play it off. But the fact of the matter is, it was just a total middle-aged man screw-up. So, yeah, great.
But is it Heine or Henny is the question.
I mean, at this point, it's one of those I've only ever seen it written downwards. Like, everybody who pronounces it seemed to have their own idea, but it's definitely Taylor, which is distinctly different from Tyler.
He was pretty good. A little too late, but he was pretty good.
So the question is, was he pretty good or was he merely adequate and the other guy was really, really bad?
Well, that's the thing, is Haskins was so unbelievably bad. And they were already down, 20-3 or 20-6 when Henny got in. So, yeah, I mean, it was favorable conditions for the fourth string quarterback to look good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think there's a story to this game besides Haskins. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And this is what I said last week. But last week, I felt like I was taking crazy pills because you and I got on this thing. And I said, hey, I listened to some of the other podcasts and people were talking about, like, this was a neutral referendum on Haskins. You came out of last week's game thinking maybe he could do something next year. And I didn't see it. I was very confused. The more people I listened to who know more than I do, the more confused I became because everybody seemed to leave thinking like, hey, there might be something there. Then the picture surfaced of him, and maybe you can explain this. He was not at a strip club, but had recreated a strip club at his home or something, unclear, but maskless with a bunch of people.
Yes, maybe I, through my lived experience, can explain this.
Well, of the two of us, you are clearly the more baller of the two totally non-baller types on this podcast.
What I read, because I think this is worth getting right and maybe further exploration, because he's a fucking legend for this one, is after the loss in a pandemic during a playoff drive, I believe what he did was went to his girlfriend's birthday party, which was in a hotel suite situation. And I don't know, there were dancers there that were either brought in for the party or were just attending, unclear. I think that was the situation. He made it clear there's not a strip club. Didn't go to a strip club. Went to a themed party instead.
Well, so the real problem I have with all of that is and this is going to sound terrible, but is that the pictures wound up online. I mean, of all of the terrible decisions that he made there, and they are legend, as you said.
I mean, legendary shit from Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, just terrible.
Not in a good way.
But how do you, as a starting player in the NFL, let alone a starting quarterback, who's been in the league for a full year, who's already had a number of stupid incidents caught on film, how do you even remotely allow pictures out of this party? Like, at that point, regardless of the bad decisions that underlie it, regardless of everything else, you are too stupid to be trusted to lead a professional football team. Anyway.
Yeah. So that, so combined that with the on-field performance,
right,
makes me never want to see him in a Redskins, in a Washington uniform again. I mean, completely done with Dwayne Haskins.
Me too, but I think this really, really undermined Rivera here. I think Rivera undermined himself.
I can't believe Haskins was in uniform on Sunday.
I can't either. And the argument that I keep hearing has been, you can't punish the other, 50-whatever guys who didn't do this because of what their guy did. And I could almost agree with it if there was any indication that you were actually punishing them by stepping from Haskins to literally any other quarterback in the NFL.
And there's no evidence of that. Before the game, I wasn't necessarily adamant that Haskins should not play because Rivera, who is closest to this, but also was disrespected in this, he's the one who made the decision, let's go with Haskins. I don't know as much as Rivera. We don't have as much data to go off of. True. I just assumed that the reason he's going with Haskins is, whatever your evaluation of Dwayne Haskins, at least he is, or maybe this is a stretch, but at least he is an NFL quarterback. He has he's played 15 games or however many games he's played. He's put up like a 70 something passer rating. It's not great. It's not good. But at least he's like an NFL player, and you need an NFL player at quarterback in this game. This is a crucial game. If you win it, you clinch the NFC East. I assumed that Taylor Heinicke, who Rivera had seen in Carolina last year and who was attending ODU a month ago, was not an NFL player. And Rivera knew that, and knew that he couldn't win with him. Just couldn't win with him. And same for Montez. That was my thinking going into the game. They don't want to play Haskins, but they feel like they have to play Haskins. Coming out of the game, the world turned a little bit. Haskins had three interceptions and was completely ineffective in every which way for three quarters of the game. And then Heinicke came in, and suddenly they're moving the ball down the field, and they get a couple scores.
Except that that is exactly what Haskins has done the rest of this season. And so I'm not clear where the reason came from. And so the reason it further undermines Rivera for me is not just ideologically, not just culture building. It's that, were the reasons you cited the real reasons Haskins was in, or is this our first instance of potential owner meddling? I don't know. And I have no evidence of that. The owner has much more important things to be doing. He's got lawsuits to file and, hush money to pay out or whatever, allegedly. I don't know. I mean, it seems super weird to me, because to me, the Rivera speech you would expect to hear is, we're disappointed in Dwayne. He's let down this team. He's let down the other players on this team. We're benching him because we are confident in those other players, and we're confident in Steven Montez and Tyler Taylor and, whoever else. And we're going to coach them up. We're going to go out there and win with the guys who want to be there. That's the Friday Night Lights speech that you would expect to hear. Yeah. And I think it was a real, real major misstep on Rivera's part that he went the other way. And part of me thinks that this was an appropriate karmic reward for everybody involved, except for the country, which now has to watch the Washington football team play the Philadelphia Eagles on national television in the last game of this weird NFL regular season. And I'm sorry to all of America for that.
We'll spin it forward to the Week 17 scenarios and the NFC East outcome, because it's fantastic. In a moment, but this game was truly disappointing for me. We were texting before the game. I expected to win. I just felt confident. I don't know why, but I felt confident that Washington was going to get this win and we were going to clinch the division in week 16. And like, I was grilling wings. I was putting shrimp on the Barbie. I had the whole family lined up. I was ready for a coronation. I don't know why. And it was immediately awful. Like, it wasn't just Haskins. It wasn't by any stretch just Haskins. Like, the defense sucked, at least in the first half.
Did they?
Steven Sims. Yeah. Did you see the drive where the Panthers went 80 yards on 10 runs, no passes?
I did.
Touchdown. Just ran it right down there, right through the defensive line's throats for 80 yards in not a must-win game, but a very important game.
The defense struggled, no doubt. And they certainly didn't do what they needed them to do, which was dominate and win. But I mean, 7 points came off of the stupid Steven Sims thing.
I'm not saying the defense sucked. I'm just saying they came out and they underwhelmed the first half.
I'll go with underwhelmed.
The defense didn't look great. I mean, they needed to look great. The defense needed to win this game on its own. And they almost, the second half, like, that was kind of what I was expecting the whole game to look like. The second half they dominated. Chase Young by himself seemed to like bring Washington at least back into the vicinity of winning this game. But in the first half, it wasn't good. And Steven Sims punt return, I mean, first of all, that should have been a fair catch. He had like two guys right on him as the ball was arriving. Didn't call for fair catch, tried to catch it, went right through his arms and back to the end zone for a touchdown. I mean, I guess that happens maybe like 1 in 1,000, but that just struck me as like the most pitiful, worst outcome punt return I've ever seen.
It was bad. His first one was also bad. His punt returns last week were not great. He has at best this year not actively hurt the team, and most of the time has actively hurt the team. It's been really unfortunate. I will also say on the officiating, look, Washington, I'm not blaming the officials. I hate people who blame the officials. That's weird. Washington did more than enough to lose this game on their own. But I will say that if the NFL wanted to have their thumb on the scale to make sure they had some more meaningful games in week 17, the calls that would have been made would have looked a lot like the calls that were made here. You know, I'm not saying they did it, but I'm just saying that if they were going to, this is what it would have looked like. Two major questionable calls going in favor of Carolina that ultimately tipped the margin of victory of the game.
Well, the one that stuck out to me was the fumble in the fourth quarter where they blew the whistle. Forward progress was done, but the whistle actually blew, like, I'd say a full second at least after the ball was out.
Yeah.
That was one. What was the other one?
The other one was the earlier one where it was a Washington turnover, where the one with Haskins' arm moving forward or not.
Oh, you know, I missed that play. Yeah. I knew he had a fumble, but I didn't see the play.
That's okay. So did the officials and the instant replay people. It was one of those ones where the TV crew is reviewing and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, clear overturn. Like, there was no doubt. It was one of those ones where just everybody sort of agrees, and I'm sure Washington's offense will come back out on the field, and then, like, Carolina snapping the ball, and they were like, oh, well, okay, I guess, sure. So it just had that, the whole day had that snake bit feel, or,
you know,
whatever. So, yeah, you know, felt whatever.
That. Felt that,
it was,
for real.
It was bad. But how did the shrimp and the wings turn out of curiosity?
Shrimp was questionable. I feel like it had been frozen. I thought I was getting some fresh stuff. The wings were delightful. My son and I love the buffalo. He loves the barbecue. It was an unhealthy amount of wings got consumed. One thing I want to revisit is our season-long debate about the Chase Young pick.
Okay.
I felt like this was both sides of it, like both sides of the coin, just perfectly illustrated. He was incredible. He was named to the Pro Bowl this week. He was incredible in forcing turnovers and just being an impact player, keeping the team in the game, anchoring the strength of the team, which is obviously the defense. But then on the other side of the ball, like, it's only going to get you so far. It's only going to get you so far when you've got unhealthy Alex Smith, bust first-round pick Dwayne Haskins, and a guy who was attending ODU a month ago. I don't even know what point I'm trying to make. I'm just illustrating, like, both sides of it. Like, Young's a generational talent. The franchise also has nothing at quarterback, absolutely nothing, and therefore has a very low ceiling.
Yeah, but I mean, that to me is not an argument against Young. It's an argument for why they didn't sign any number of, you know, replacement level NFL quarterbacks who were out there this year. And I guess they did. I mean, I guess the Kyle Allen injury, from a certain perspective, you weren't anticipating.
I'm not going to, like, acknowledge Kyle Allen as, like, a potentially, like, franchise quarterback.
But they don't need they need a franchise quarterback. You want a franchise quarterback. But I think that Young plus, like I said last week, or like we saw last night, Young plus somebody like a Teddy Bridgewater, you know, a journeyman, but a reasonably adequate replacement level journeyman quarterback, to me is superior to whoever, Tua and no Chase Young.
The problem is Smith, his salary is so big. You can't have Bridgewater. You can't have $40 million at quarterback. I don't think. I don't know. I'm not a capologist.
Well, I mean, it's whoever signs Dak is going to have $40 plus million at quarterback.
Maybe you can spend $40 million when you have like a good quarterback. $40 million when you have like an average or mediocre quarterback. Two average or mediocre quarterbacks.
I think they should try to sign Dak, give up the picks and sign Dak. That's what
That's hardcore. That's a hot one.
I've got a lot of takes today. I'm take-rific today.
Well, I really enjoyed watching the Dolphins on Saturday night. And, like, Tua, the offense was struggling. You know, he wasn't necessarily playing bad, but he was having one of those Alex Smith games where he has, like, 18 completions for 75 yards. And they brought in Fitzmagic. It was wonderful. And I just had a thought of, like, oh, well, that would be interesting. Like a Tua-Alex Smith duo. And I guess that was kind of the best case of, like, Haskins and Smith. But Haskins was such a legendary, turd.
I mean, I found myself thinking last night something that I never expected to think, which is this a bigger quarterback bust than Heath Shuler, all things considered?
No. No, because Shuler was so high. I mean, what was he, fourth?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, just Haskins' draft position takes some of the sting out of it, but like the sensational way in which he is busted elevates it, certainly. Like Shuler was kind of a boring bust.
I mean, so Shuler is interesting because Shuler had a little bit of the RG3 thing where they also took the second quarterback late who became, you know, Gus Frerotte in that case, who became
seventh round, yeah.
Who became successful and in some ways made the Shuler pick seem better somehow, because like, well, okay, so that one failed, but the draft was okay. And same, I always felt like RG3's eventual busting was mitigated somewhat by like, well, they knew enough to take Cousins. But there's none of that with Haskins. I mean, Haskins, yeah. You know, there's nothing.
At least Haskins gave us something to remember. Like, you know, people forget that Patrick Ramsey was a first rounder, but it was, you know, he didn't, it wasn't spectacular. The failure was just, you know, whatever, move on, draft another one. I love that you can look at the last 30 years of Washington football, and it's like there's just so many flavors of just quarterback draft failure alone that you have a whole menu.
Yeah, it's really depressing in hindsight how good Kirk Cousins looks, because I did not enjoy the Kirk Cousins experience when he was here. But man, you look back, and that seems like a real high watermark of the last three decades.
So are we ready to talk about next week?
I mean, sure, why not? I got nothing to rehash from this week. This week, to me, was one of those ones where you just kind of, you know, it's a real on to Cincinnati, Bill Belichick kind of moment, I think. There's nothing to be done with this.
Yeah, it definitely took the wind out of my sails. I was thinking from the Cincinnati game, but really from the Dallas game at Thanksgiving through yesterday, that was a pretty good run. They won, what, 4 in a row? And then they lost a close one, had the ball with a chance to win against Seattle. That's a 5-week stretch where you're feeling pretty good. You got all the way up to 6-8, and you've got Carolina. You can beat Carolina, take the division, and then play Philly. You're finishing probably 7-9, possibly 8-8 with a playoff berth, you know, and looking good doing it down the stretch. Like I was feeling pretty good, a quarterback aside, just about Washington football. And then yesterday happened. And yesterday was not kind to the rest of the NFC East either. I mean, Dallas beat Philly, but the Giants got beaten badly. And the bloom has kind of come off of the rose. Like NFC East kind of had like a rebirth along with this Washington run where it was like, oh, maybe they're not that bad. You know, Jalen Hurts looks good. New York won 5 in a row or something like that. Dallas has come on just a little bit. Like they're not looking bad. But when you look at what's going to happen here is there's still a 6-win champion in play. Like a 6-win NFC East champion could happen. So that's not out of the question. But at best, it's going to be a 7-win team. And it's probably going to be either Dallas or Washington. Dallas plays at New York 1:00 Sunday. Dallas 6-9. New York 5-10. New York with the tiebreakers over Washington, of course. And then Sunday Night Football, 8:20. Washington at Philly. Philly cannot get into this. Philly only has 4 wins. So they're playing for pride. I did not see Dallas coming on like this. I think they won 3 in a row to get to 6-9. So we'll know the winner of Dallas, New York. And I guess Washington has to win to get in. right? Because if Dallas wins, they get to 7 wins. If New York wins, they get the 6 wins and have the tiebreaker over the 6-win Washington. So Washington has to win on Sunday night, or it's going to be the winner of Dallas, New York that gets the division.
Correct. Washington remains in the driver's seat. In fact, from a certain perspective, nothing has changed for Washington since, you know, heading into this week, except that they didn't win this week.
They had to win one of these last two. Nothing has changed, except now they have to just win this one game.
Correct. Correct. But also, I'm curious to see how Philly, not being eligible, you know, being eliminated, plays here, because I was really, really, really worried about them. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts, as I think I've said like 8 billion times, is just the kind of quarterback that has given Washington fits for what feels like, you know, 40 years. And Philly is not the same team that they beat up on early. But I'm curious. I mean, like, yes, they're playing for pride. Yes, you always want to be a spoiler, et cetera, et cetera. But by it being the last game of this interminably long season, at night, if Washington can reverse the entire course of their season by actually scoring in the first quarter, I think you could get Philly to just sort of warm the cars and go home. Mm-hmm. And it's nice because Philly is, while they're playing for pride, no matter what they do, they're going to be giving a playoff spot to one of their three division rivals. I mean, that's how mm-hmm. this works, but it's just mm-hmm. like, they can't feel great about that. You know, it's not like it's for the wild card and they could send Arizona or, you know, somebody to in their place, in Washington's place. So I don't know.
Nobody shows them the JJ Watt speech from yesterday about like showing up even during a trash season.
Well, I hope someone does, because I really feel like many NFL players must feel about JJ Watt the way I do, which is like, just shut up. Just stop. Just stop.
I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I really don't like JJ Watt. I've always disliked JJ Watt, including yesterday.
I don't know that I've always disliked him, but the more I've learned about him and just seen him and had to sort of exist in a media world where he is, or a mediated world, I guess, where he is. Yes, I agree. Ugh, he's terrible. Why have you hated him from the jump?
There's no real reason. Like, I think he's probably a good person. Like, he's a great football player, and I think he's raised a lot of money for good causes and stuff. Like, whatever, JJ Watt, good guy. I'm the bad guy here. But yesterday, him giving like a 2-minute rant to the media about like players quitting on the season when you're 4-11 or whatever, I really hope he also delivered that same speech to his locker room. And like, why would you give that to the camera, other than like just trying to make yourself look better? I don't know.
It feels like he does that, which is actually brings us back to Dwayne Haskins, where he ran out on the field to apparently just sort of dap up Tyler Heineke, whatever the kid's name is.
I'm going with Henny. I just like Henny.
Whatever. Good. I mean, it brings to mind Miami Dolphins legend Chad Henne. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not optimistic about next week, but I'm more optimistic about next week than I was about this week, because the other side of our text that you discussed was me being like, none of this is going to matter. Washington's going to lose, because it just had that feeling to me. Yeah. And I'm not quite as dour for next week.
Going into it, I do not feel good about the Sunday Night Football aspect. And I really don't understand why that is the Sunday night game. Like, could they undo that? Because there's other good games. Packers, Bears, and Cardinals, Rams. Like, there's other, like, playoff teams facing one another with implications for next week. But I guess they can't move those games because one team or another could impact their decisions with how they approach the game.
Right. I think there is both a rule that if two games, you know, have the same impact, then they have to be played at the same time these days, since they redid the scheduling a couple of years back. And also there's the TV common sense thing, which is that I think, I might be wrong, but I think Washington is the only game that doesn't fit into that preseeding category that is a guaranteed winner is in, a guaranteed elimination game. So from that perspective, it makes sense that you would want to have it there. The downside is it's Washington. And if if Taylor Henne is the starting quarterback, I mean, you're really reaching to sell that. And if Dwayne Haskins is the starting quarterback, you're reaching even more, which I don't think there's a chance of, but just, God, can you even imagine?
Well, this is giving me the vibes. I feel bad for all the other viewers. This is giving me the vibes of like that stretch of pre-Deshaun Watson Houston Texans teams that made the playoffs, but they never had a quarterback. Like they were always like 9-7, 10-6, but didn't have a quarter. It was always like Matt Schaub or like, I'm looking at it now, like Brian Hoyer, Brock Osweiler.
There were even worse guys. They weren't they the ones who had somebody start a playoff game who was like never heard from again, basically the equivalent of Taylor Heineken.
Yes. So I'm actually looking this up because it was like really reminding me of that. Like this team is really reminding me of that team, those teams. So in 2017, the Texans lost their playoff game with Brock Osweiler at quarterback. That works. That's on the nose. In 2016, they lost their playoff game with, bear with me, Brian Hoyer. That checks out. And I'm sorry, we're going through the Houston Texans playoff results. In 2013, their quarterback was Matt Schaub. And we have one more here. In 2012, these were all forward, like opening weekend playoff losses for a team with a J.J. Watt-led good defense. In 2012, oh, this is one. This might be the one you were thinking of. T.J. Yates.
Yeah, that's the one. That's exactly the one. And he swapped during the game. Somebody else took some snaps, I think. I think he swapped in with somebody else. Or maybe that was the week before for the play-in game where TJ Yates came in and took over for somebody terrible. Like, yes, you're right. That's what this feels like. Unless we get a full-on, you know, cue the explosions in the sky, ultra-dramatic Alex Smith moment to close out this season, which would be weird.
Well, I'm not getting my hopes up because this is like week three in a row of – you know, fingers crossed for Alex Smith. I will call back to last week's episode. You and I had a quick, like, how many points is Alex Smith worth over Dwayne Haskins in the Carolina game? And I think we both said seven. Yeah, we both said seven. Like we would give the Washington seven additional points if Smith were starting instead of Haskins. Were we talking about Alex Smith with just one leg? Or a healthy Alex Smith. I can't recall.
I don't recall either, but I'm starting to think that either or would be about the same.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, hopefully we'll have Alex Smith. I don't know. Like, I don't see... I guess it will be interesting to see what Haskins... In my mind, I've already moved on. Like, Haskins is done. But I guess they have to make a decision. Like, is he the backup QB? Is he on the roster? Is he inactive? Like, so, we'll find out in the next couple of days, I guess.
So we talked, you know, earlier about how Rivera made the wrong call with letting him play. If Rivera were to turn around and cut him today, just outright cut him, or early this week or whatever, would that in any way make up in your mind for the bad decision earlier?
Not really.
Yeah, it really is the, like, you got caught doing it, so you apologize after the fact, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm rooting for him to just get, like, outright cut, dismissed, like, just out of our lives. Like, pack shit, get out. Like, just cut it. But I could see, like, how that in and of itself could maybe have a negative outcome. I don't know.
Well, there's an argument to be made that the best thing to do is to say, oops, look at that. He had a close contact test positive for COVID, and he's on the COVID-19 list for the next, you know, until we get this all sorted out. And then you put him on the list. Nobody has to think about him for a little while. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, it turned out to be a false positive. Everybody's okay. Everybody's healthy. Yay, we're fine. And then you cut him after the season. That's probably the lowest, like, disruption way of doing it, and it prevents him from having to, or even really being able to, actively talk to the media for whatever that's worth. But I don't know. It seems obvious to me. It seems like what the team would have done 5 years ago if Bruce Allen were running it. And, you know, i.e. a really shady person who does really shady stuff. I don't know if this new crew will go there, but that seems like the natural resolution to this to me. Just get out of the Dwayne Haskins business quietly.
The close contact mention tickled me because I'm like, could you get COVID from having somebody's ass in your face? Just like somebody who hasn't been in your circle. You know, you haven't been quarantining with this person and like their ass is just like right up in there. I don't know.
I'm sure somewhere there is a scientific study on transmission of novel coronavirus from ass to face that we can go look up.
All right. Other topics on the Mr. iPod rundown that we can quickly jump around to.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I will say on the Wizards, 0-3 start, lost to Philly, two losses to Orlando, all of them close. Yesterday, there was a fun little stat tidbit. Washington lost to Carolina in football, 20-13. Washington lost to Orlando in basketball, 120-113. I don't know why that's interesting, but cool. All the games were close. But still, to be 0-3 is tough. Westbrook sat yesterday's game. It was the second of a back-to-back against Orlando. So, you know, you don't want to see him already sitting games three games in and talking about sore knees and whatnot. Also, he hasn't been very good. It looks like he's, you know, lost some explosiveness. The shooting isn't there. He did have two triple doubles in his first two games, whatever. But yeah, I just wanted to say about the Wizards, I'm not too worried because they've been playing three like decent teams. I think Philly and Orlando are both going to be in the playoffs and they both basically have the same group that they had from last year. And the Wizards have all sorts of new shit going on and their rotation is all over the place. And I don't think they know what they have yet. Bertans has not played very much and he hasn't made much of an impact. He's their third best player. Rui is out for a few weeks. I think the biggest thing, and this might interest you, is that their number 9 overall pick out of Israel, Denny, is good. And Denny
looks good.
Is playing. He's very good. Like, I'm excited about that. He's playing major minutes. Like, he's starting. He's getting starter minutes. He's in there in crunch time. He's making threes. He looks like he knows what he's doing on defense. He's a good passer. Like, this is a gifted player. He's 19 years old out of Israel. And he's, like, thrown right into the NBA with, like, a short preseason. And, like, I mean, the dude looks like a good player. And that's probably the biggest thing that you could say about the Wizards three games in.
Well, so I watched, I found myself more excited for the opener than I expected precisely because of him. I did not realize that I was going to be this, you know, provincial about it, this sort of tribal about it, no pun intended, but I was like, that is pretty cool. I want to see the Israeli guy. Mm-hmm. And they felt like a fun team to watch. I didn't watch the whole game. I actually didn't see them lose. So I watched what looked like a pretty competitive game and I've tuned in here and there since, although I have not actively sat down to watch one of the games. And the question I have is this, and I mean, for anybody who for some reason is hearing us for the first time, the whole thing here is that, like, I'm the world's most casual viewer of the Wizards, barely even a casual fan, and know very little. So the question I have here for you as the sort of subject matter expert is it possible that Scott Brooks is not a good coach, or is at best a so-so coach? Where do we stand on that?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I feel like that's been a constant, like calling Brooks's tactics into question and his rotations into question has been a constant of his time here. I think the fact that he had success in Oklahoma City with Durant and Westbrook and went to the playoffs, I mean, I could have probably had success with Durant and Westbrook, it has like held him up. You know, like nobody's like called for his firing or what have you, because he's like a legitimate NBA coach. And it seems to be kind of like a likable, smart guy. But yeah, the rotations especially are questionable. I just think they need to figure it out. They have a lot of new pieces and are figuring out how to like fit all of those together. I think it's going to be a rocky start and they're going to get better as the season goes along, assuming that Westbrook can stay on the court. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun team. Like Beal is delicious. Beal is so freaking good. He's such a bucket. Anytime he wants it, he can get it. And if Bertans can start making threes again and playing more than 20 minutes a game, that really opens things up. One thing about the Wizards that's just brutal is their broadcast team. The NBC Sports Washington broadcast team. I don't even know the play-by-play guy's name. The color guy is Drew Gooden. And Drew Gooden, it's a weird one because, like, as a Wizards fan, I have no connection to him whatsoever. He played for the team for a little while, but I think of him more as a Cavalier or even a Kansas City Jayhawk. I have no affinity for Drew Gooden whatsoever. But he's the on the broadcast. The downgrade from Buckhantz and Chenier to these guys is just so severe and really head-scratching, considering that Buckhantz and Chenier were summarily dismissed 3 years ago. Like, it's just a really bad broadcast. Last night, they blew like a 17-point lead and lost to Orlando, second game in a back-to-back. The end game of that, these two guys talking about it, first of all, they both said they were at a loss for words multiple times. They both said that within the span of like a minute and a half. Although I think Drew Gooden said he's at a loss for words on both occasions. Also, Drew Gooden, after the team just lost, said, and I missed this the first time around, but he said, "I called this a must-win game." And that's what it was, but they lost. It's the third game of the NBA regular season. It's a must-win game. Like, I know things get oversaid and, like, misused or whatever, but that's so fucking ridiculous. Like, the broadcast is just absolutely terrible. It's so bad that like, you know when you watch, like, NBA TV or MLB or whatever, you get to choose your broadcast team? You know, like, League Pass or whatever, you can choose to watch it with the Magic broadcast or the Wizards. This is, like, the first time I can think of where I would actively, like, choose the other team's broadcast team.
They're that bad. I've had that, with Washington football for years. Although what I'm starting to wonder is, well, two things. One is the whole idea of having your home broadcast team be this sort of like institution, should we maybe do away with that? Wouldn't it be better if you just sort of were willing to shuffle the team every year? Because I feel like what happens is they put together a booth and they want that to be the booth moving forward. You know what I mean? They want it to be Sonny, Sam, and Frank or whatever for the next three decades. And so then each change feels seismic. And I feel like if they were like, yeah, that guy we did last year didn't work out, we're putting in a new guy. Let's see how this goes. Until you wound up with a booth that naturally cohered and then maybe would become a decades-long institution. I just feel like the way they're approaching it. And Monday Night Football has the same problem on a national scale where they keep trying to, you know, craft the booth. And it's like, don't craft the booth. Put in people who work and sub out the people who don't until you have a booth that works.
I think that's partly right. Yeah. And the Wizards were kind of there the last couple. Like, they had Kara Lawson as the color person, color commentator.
She was good, as I remember.
And she was really good. I really liked Kara Lawson. Also, she gave a speech to her Duke women's basketball team recently that went kind of viral that I suggest everybody watches and listens to. It's about respect, and it's really good. But anyway, Kara Lawson, she's great. this team is just so bad. It's like I've grown to be okay with like Bob Carpenter and FP Santangelo on the Nats cast, but I couldn't stand when it was Bobby Carpenter and Rob Dibble. Like, Rob Dibble was so grating and so bad.
Dibble was annoying. Dibble was incredibly annoying. I agree with that. Now, did you watch whichever one of the Saturday NFL games was on Amazon Prime this week?
I had it on. Who was calling it?
Well, that's what's interesting. They offered you could switch between toggle between three different booths.
I didn't notice that.
Apparently, there was a fourth if you were willing to fire up Twitch. But I have Twitch is my
bridge too far.
It's my bright line. Like everything else, I try to keep up with my kids. I'll try to do whatever. I've done more stupid VR climbing games or whatever else, and played more Fortnite than I ever thought I would. But Twitch is where I draw the line. That's it. But no. So there were three. There was the sort of the two males booth. Then there was a booth that was Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer.
Oh, keep those women away from me. Give me the, exactly. The two male booth.
Yeah, they were the secondary booth. You want to make sure you you have them out of your No Girls Allowed clubhouse. And then the third one was like, I think they called it a scouts feed. And it was, God, I forget. It was three people. It was like Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah and somebody else who I'm forgetting.
You have to choose the scouts feed in this scenario, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
yeah.
But what I've always wanted is the like light background music feed where they give you the Nat sound from the stadium and just, you know, either I always say explosion in the sky for the same reason that the Friday Night Lights joke that I've made three times this podcast, but like, whatever, it doesn't have to be that, just sort of generic, like instrumental, modern, you know, alternative guitar type noises. And just like, let me watch the game in peace without having to be told, what is going on or what to think. And I really think it would be a more pleasant experience. If you're going to start offering multiple audio, I really wish that was one of them. But what I was going to say to your point is it would be awesome if Amazon Prime signs an actual deal, if they offered both teams' radio feeds as options on there. So you could choose to, you know, sync up the radio broadcast via the Amazon feed. That would be like super cool. That's all.
I prefer the home town broadcast typically because at least they know the team.
They know someone.
Like they're familiar with like all the players. They're not going to be like, oh, this guy who's the worst tackler we've ever seen is such a great tackler. you know, like that always bothers me. The thing that bothered me about the Amazon broadcast was like during commercials, I didn't know what to do. It was like too much of a pain in the ass to like toggle back to my HDMI and like watch another channel or whatever. So it was like you just had to sit there.
Oh, that's
interesting. I really didn't like that. Yeah. Like, because if I'm watching a normal game on like channel whatever, 703, I'll just jump around at commercials to something else. But when it's on Amazon, it's like that just takes like five more seconds.
Yeah, no, you're right. I hadn't thought of that because it was the only game in its time slot. It was just on in the background and I wasn't going to be flipping to anything. Fascinating.
One other thing I did want to mention, you had on previous podcast recommended the Dead Eyes podcast. The Dead Eyes podcast about, what's the guy's name? Connor Ratliff.
Connor Ratliff, yeah.
Comedian, actor. The whole podcast is about him getting a small part in Band of Brothers 20 years ago. But then at the last minute, Tom Hanks, who was directing the episode that Connor was supposed to be in, decided after looking at the audition tapes that Connor had, quote, dead eyes and pulled the job. So Connor was not on Band of Brothers. And this was a very traumatic event to young Connor. And now he's kind of putting the pieces back together 20 years later and doing this whole podcast. I'm on episode 4 or 5. I don't know how many episodes there are. How long does this go?
Hey, it's still going, and they moved to what they call a second season, but the second season I came into it after that had started, so I don't know like how many episodes it was. And I think they're like 16 episodes now total or something.
So I really enjoyed some 15. Of it because he had Bobby Moynihan on as like one episode, so just him and Bobby Moynihan, the SNL cast member, the former SNL cast member. And like, they talked a lot about like Bobby Moynihan's experience with Tom Hanks as when Tom Hanks was like hosting SNL, and more specifically, like them doing David S. Pumpkins together. And so giving that perspective of Hanks. So that's kind of the way it's constructed. He had Amy Mann on the last episode I listened to, and Amy Mann was like just a musician that he was listening to a lot at the time, you know, in 1999 or whatever. I'm really enjoying it, but I'm dying to know if Tom Hanks comes into the picture at some point and they talk about this. Like I want to Google it so bad.
And not only Google it, but like I had the same experience as I was listening through. I'm caught up now, but as I'm going, it's like I don't even want to read the descriptions of the other episodes that are out there because like I want to know, but I don't want to know. I can tell you where we're at by now or not, and just let you keep looking.
I don't think I want to know. I think I'm going to keep going on this journey with Connor Ratliff without knowing, but it's killing me.
Well,
it's killing every episode. He's like, I just want to make this clear. Like, I do not, this is not about like shitting on Tom Hanks. Like, I don't have anything against Tom Hanks anymore, but it's killing me.
The thing I think is interesting is that it's really difficult to describe why it's so listenable and good, because the abstract description, as you just laid it out, as I probably laid it out when I talked about it, as it is if you read about it, I find totally uninspiring. Like, it's
an interesting story, but not one told over like many hours.
Right, exactly. And I say this as like, you know, I could certainly, my time with the Washington football team is the sort of thing that was like makes for a number of amusing anecdotes, all of which you've heard probably four times. But like the idea of trying to subject somebody to a forensic breakdown of this one experience in my life that was significant to me, and that has some cameos from people that other people like, but ultimately is of no significance whatsoever to anyone else. It sounds like torture to put that on people. But for some reason, I don't know if you can put...
Yeah, but he'll have like the director, like Rian Johnson directed one of the Star Wars movies. And it's like, that's an episode where like they're kind of talking about Connor's Tom Hanks experience, but it's a lot more about like Rian Johnson's experience in the, you know, Hollywood and Star Wars.
It's exactly. He does a great job of making it bigger than just him, even though when you hear the description, it just sounds incredibly solipsistic. I will say that the Amy Mann episode to me, and I don't think this constitutes any kind of spoiler of any kind, but to me, that was the one where it felt to me like he was getting the podcast going. He was having some success and he realized like, hey, I can talk to this artist that I've always admired tremendously.
Right.
And
she had like, heard like the first episode or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was just kind of like, there was the connection. That's my point is that's the one with the thinnest connection. It reaches the point a little later and not too much later where it's gotten enough traction that I feel like the guests are a little more directly relevant.
Yeah. Cause like John Hamm was the guest on an early one and there was no real connection other than like they had acted together in that period kind of.
Yeah. And that felt like I can get John Hamm on here and people like John Hamm, but I don't know. So are you enjoying it? You're going to keep pressing through on it.
I'm going to keep up. I do have a question related and I know we're running out of time, but the question related is like, do you have a dead eyes moment? Do you have a moment or something that has happened to you that has kind of haunted you, or you know what I mean? Like, or whether it was a firing or not getting something or the way that someone once described you or anything like that?
No. I mean, to me, the equivalent is the whole, because it's not a moment where somebody described me in a specific way, although, during my time with Washington, there was that article in the city paper about how many people hated me. I don't think you were quoted. Chris Mottram was definitely quoted.
Oh my gosh, I have to Google this.
Yeah. Oh, it's bad. It's real bad. That was during those initial weeks where I was being just eviscerated by the commenters, and McKenna wrote about it for the city paper.
Did my brother say something mean about you?
No, your brother offers what I have always viewed as like, sort of a qualified, because McKenna went and talked to other candidates. I believe you and Chris both were considered for the position and both, I believe, turned it down, if I remember correctly.
I'm reading this right now.
It's rough. Great. Yeah, it's
Chris
rough.
Chris Mottram, who co-founded Mr. Irrelevant, blah, 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 took time out of his own blogging to post some advice to Terrell in the comments section.
Yeah.
You probably should have waited at least a few days before openly defending Snyder. I don't even know what this is about, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, it was not
Mottram, too. Chris Mottram, too, interviewed for the job Terrell got and says he would have taken it had he thought that Snyder would let him write what he wanted.
Well,
he gave me an email. Chris Mottram wrote, as a company, the Redskins just aren't an organization I'd like to work for.
You know, Chris was always a smart cat, and I admire that. I always felt like his comments about both me and everything else in that article were very sort of qualified, where with the way I read them, given my personal neuroses, was I don't think Turrell's doing a great job, nor do I think he will do a great job, but he seems like an okay human being, and I don't see the need to like annihilate him in print. And I've always appreciated that from Chris. Maybe I'm reading his comments wrong, but that's how they play to me. Anyway, so that would be sort of one, except that I did make it through. I did stick with the job. I did manage to get things under some semblance of control. So to me, I don't have the dead eyes moment. I have the I guess for me, the sliding doors is after that, when I was sort of like, okay, and that's enough of this. I'm going to go back into my previous career and not try to do the sports media thing. I guess that's the one for me.
I just put this story in my pocket from the city paper. The headline is flame retardant.
Yeah with a picture of me. So bad. What's your dead eyes moment?
Well, the one for me, there's like, it's the I was once described in like an internal document at AOL as a quote near star, and that was such like a weird note to get. Also, it was not intended for me to read. It kind of shook me, and I think it's actually pretty accurate.
In what way do you think it's pretty accurate?
Well, the context of it was I was hosting the Sports Bloggers Live podcast for AOL in like 2005. And it kind of become my full-time job, and it had some traction. And there was this movement internally to like take the show to New York. Like it was like the only podcast, and AOL, I think, was looking at it as kind of like the pilot, and there could be like other podcasts about different topics, but they wanted to produce these out of New York instead of Dulles, where the AOL campus was that I was working. So they wanted to take the show. Their show was sponsored at the time by Bud Light. It was like kind of like it was happening a little bit, you know, low level happening. And I was the host. So anyways, there's this internal document that's all about like taking Sports Bloggers Live to New York and like building out a studio and hiring a whole team and just making it a larger franchise. But it kind of was like an open question, like who should we put in the chair? And then there was like a portion of this document that described me, like the current host, me. And the like money line was kind of like, you know, Matram is a near star. And my memory of what else it said, because I don't have this document, I think it was somehow like handed to me at some point, was that the recommendation was like, look for another host. That has always stuck with me. And I had also keep in mind that like me and other people that were doing the show, like we made the show, like we created the whole thing. So it was ours. You know, it wasn't just that I was like tapped to host at some point where like I hosted because I made it. And so anyway, but I thought that was like a very apt and interesting description. Like I'm very glad that a star and moved to New York to host a podcast for AOL in 2005. I'm very glad. Like I think I'm fortunate for the sliding doors and the ways in which they slid in this case. But yeah, that's my dead eyes.
Well, it's funny because as you were talking about this, I remembered a different article about you that was talking, if I remember correctly, this was one of the ones after you moved to North Carolina and talking about how you had sort of, you know, changed to this sort of low key beach lifestyle. They kept talking about your eyes in relation to the color of the water at the beach near your house. Do you remember this one? I have no idea why this stuck in my head.
I think that was the New York Observer. And the writer was very, like, there was a lot of prose in that story about details that were completely inconsequential.
Yes.
About, like, the, you know, like tree-lined streets. And keep in mind, this person never came to Wilmington to see me. like we just had, like, lunch in New York one day. And it was even stuff in there about, like, what I was eating. It was, like, you know, in between bites of a, you know, chicken Alfredo or whatever. Yeah, very New York Observer.
Well, that's bizarre. So anyway, that's what I think of for your dead eyes moment, is your like seafoam green eyes or whatever the hell it was. Anyway,
yes.
Well, this has been a fascinating, you know,
better.
Well, maybe we should do a Dead Eyes segment of this one every week, because I found yours genuinely interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I'll do a Near Star podcast. I won't do a Near Star podcast. The premise of Dead Eyes is just too good. That Tom Hanks was the one who did it.
Right.
You know, that's what makes it.
Well, and I don't know if you've gotten to it yet, but it becomes a real thing about the question of if he was supposed to have ever heard the Dead Eyes comment or not.
Yeah.
If that was supposed to have gotten to him, which reminds me of your Near Star.
I was definitely not supposed to see the part where it was written that I am not a star. I was not supposed to see that part.
I mean, that's certainly the negative way to look at it. That's how I would have looked at it. But it could be that you're not a star yet. And if they had just moved you to New York and let you be the next, who's the ex-MTV VJ who did all the podcasts in 2005? I can't think of the guy's name. It doesn't matter. Make you the Mark Maron of sports podcasting. You would have then become a star, just like Mark Maron.
Well, I'll just keep hanging out with the Mr. Irrelevant pod.
It makes me happier. It worked out better for me in the end.
All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you next week. It's either going to be wonderful or it's going to hurt sort of bad. I don't know. I really want to be a 7-9 playoff team. I'll leave it there.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
All right.
Talk to you. Bye.